Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, November 17th, 2015. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. High wind warning in effect. Inslee says Washington will welcome refugees. Pullman officials to consider a cap on cannabis businesses. And Moscow Council rejects all bids for drilling well number 10 and updates floodplain ordinance. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The southern part of the Palouse has so far avoided the worst of the high winds forecast for the inland northwest today and tonight, but that could change. The Ritzville and Spokane areas have experienced high winds this afternoon, with 77-mile-per-hour gusts recorded at Spangle and a 61-mile-per-hour gust recorded at the Spokane International Airport. The National Weather Service has issued a high wind warning, saying 70-mile-per-hour gusts are possible at lower elevations in the region, with stronger gusts in mountain areas. A number of businesses and schools in the Spokane area closed early today in anticipation of the storm or canceled evening activities. Gonzaga University canceled late afternoon classes and sent employees home. Forecasters expected the strongest winds to hit around 7 p.m. A forecast discussion on the National Weather Service Spokane webpage says very strong winds with speeds of historic levels are forecast for this afternoon and evening. Once again, the high wind warning is in effect for central and eastern Washington and northern Idaho through midnight tonight. Washington Governor Jay Inslee has criticized governors of states that have threatened to bar Syrian refugees from entering their states due to fear caused by the Paris attacks last Friday. Inslee wrote in a statement released yesterday, "We have been and will continue to be a state that embraces compassion and eschews fear-mongering. I stand firmly with President Obama, who said this morning, we do not close our hearts to these victims of such violence and somehow start equating the issue of refugees with the issue of terrorism." Republican Seattle Port Commissioner Bill Bryant, who is running for governor next year, responded by saying, "We should not let our compassion blind us to legitimate public and personal safety concerns and to those who might take advantage of our generosity and openness." Bryant said refugees should be closely screened. Republican State Representative Jay Rodney of Snoqualmie wrote, "Governor Inslee should be worrying about protecting the residents of Washington State rather than following lockstep Obama's policy of allowing unvetted Syrian migrants in. We know that ISIS is infiltrating the ranks of these migrants." The Seattle Weekly The Stranger reported on its blog late this afternoon, Rodney calls Islam, quote, "incompatible with Western civilization." President Barack Obama has said he will resettle 10,000 Syrian refugees in the United States during the next year, and Inslee said Washington will welcome some of them if the federal government sends them to the state. Washington Refugee Coordinator Sarah Peterson told the Associated Press 25 refugees from Syria have come to the state in the period between October 2014 and September of this year. Peterson said most of the 3,000 international refugees arriving in the state during the period were from Iraq, Ukraine, Somalia, the Republic of Congo, and Myanmar. The Pullman City Council will hold a legally required public hearing tonight on the six-month moratorium on new pot shops they passed last week. Pullman officials say they may consider imposing a permanent pot store cap for the city to replace the three-store cap formerly imposed by the State Liquor Control Board at the dawn of legalization in 2013, but then rescinded by the newly named Liquor and Cannabis Board this summer. The board rescinded geographical caps on cannabis growers, processors, and retail outlets statewide as part of the role set out by legislation passed this summer designed to merge the medical and recreational cannabis distribution systems in the state. Pullman's moratorium on new pot stores does not include the third store already planned and permitted on Bishop Boulevard, so Pullman could have three stores on Bishop Boulevard soon. Pullman Planning Director Pete Dickinson told the Lewiston Tribune, city officials say there is a potential for illegal activity, such as driving while drugged, taking pot across the state line, or access to minors. Dickinson said, it's fair to say when we review an application for a new marijuana facility, it's different than a restaurant or grocery store. There's a heightened level of concern from a public safety standpoint. The Liquor and Cannabis Board has indicated it will likely allow licensed collective medical cannabis gardens and commercial cannabis research companies as part of the merging of the medical and recreational markets in Washington. Dickinson said during the six-month moratorium, city officials will also consider limiting those activities and reducing the 1,000-foot buffer zone required between cannabis businesses and public parks, daycare centers, and arcades, likely to be visited by young people. The Liquor and Cannabis Board recently allowed local governments to reduce the 1,000-foot buffer zones, although the 1,000-foot buffer zone between cannabis businesses and schools will remain in effect statewide. In other business tonight, the Pullman City Council will take a final vote on the 2016 budget. We'll be asked to approve an engineering services agreement with HDR Engineering to provide a mercury control plan. We'll vote on a resolution amending parks and recreation fees for 2016. And we'll vote on a resolution authorizing the city to accept a Washington Department of Transportation capital grant for Pullman Transit. The Pullman City Council will also hold an executive session on the topic of labor negotiations. The Pullman City Council meeting will begin at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall. The Moscow City Council last night voted unanimously to update the city's floodplain ordinance to bring it into compliance with the Federal Emergency Management Agency's National Flood Insurance Program. City Planner Mike Ray told the council, by way of background, the city recently revised the floodplain map a few years ago and removed 80 to 90 properties from the special flood hazard area or 100-year floodplain. Those properties, mostly west of Main Street near the university, are no longer required to carry flood insurance. Ray said the revisions to the city's floodplain ordinance change the wording of the flood hazard section of city code, which is Chapter 5.
What that does is provides regulations for all development within the 100-year floodplain. And so within that chapter, there's methods for reducing flood loss. It also describes and lays out the responsibilities of the floodplain administrator, which happens to be the zoning administrator in our department. Also lays out an appeals and variance process for floodplain variances and applications, and also has some construction requirements for new or substantial improved structures within a special flood hazard area, whether they be residential or non-residential construction. And just to give you a little bit of background about why we're here tonight, we were contacted in early 2015 by Idaho Department of Water Resources, our state floodplain coordinator, and they let us know that we were coming around that 10-year mark for a floodplain ordinance review. The National Flood Insurance Program, which we're a part of since 2003, reviews that about every 10 years. We're about year 11 right now. Our last review was back in 2004. And then the National Flood Insurance Program, we've been a member in since, I believe, 2004. And what that does is allows federally backed flood insurance for all structures within the city of Moscow, whether they're in the floodplain or not in the floodplain. You can happen to be not in the floodplain and still carry flood insurance on your property if you want. And the city goes above and beyond the typical requirements of that program, and we earn a 15% reduction citywide in rates of flood insurance. And so all citizens that are, you know, wanting to have flood insurance on their property right away just get a 15% reduction because of the things we do to go above and beyond as part of the program. It also requires certain minimum requirements, and that's why the state floodplain coordinator contacted us and let us know that we need to make some changes with our current ordinance. So in April of this year, they provided feedback, and a lot of the updated just needed to be current language that exists within the program. And so they've tweaked some of that language, and it's just to bring it up to date with their current regulations.
That was Moscow City Planner Mike Ray at last night's City Council meeting. The Moscow City Council last night voted unanimously to reject two companies' bids to drill future well number 10. When drilled, the well will be the backup to the city's largest well, number 9. Well number 9 supplies 40% of the city's water supply. City Public Works Director Les McDonald said besides the fact the bids came in significantly higher than city engineer Kevin Lilly had estimated, there were a number of procedural errors in the bidding process.
The bids came in a bit over the engineer's estimate. The bid schedule, or the bid was set up with two schedules for two different sizes of wells, either a 20-inch casing or a 24-inch casing. That was done to really look at the possibilities of different capacity of well production. And depending on what kind of bids we got, the idea was to make a decision about what size of casing to proceed with and what size of well to drill. So that's why there are two bids in the bid schedule. We did receive two bids, one from Snyder Water Services of St. Paul, Oregon, as the low bidder, and the other is Holt Services out of Edgewood, Washington, as the second bidder. Quite a bit of difference in the bids that were received. Very interesting when you start looking at the bid tabulations that are in the packets. Subsequent to the bids, we determined that there were a couple of procedural issues that came up through the process. There were two things in particular that were not addressed during the bidding process that we need to correct. The first of those has to do with the prevailing wage, which is the Davis-Bacon federal wage program. And within the multitude of regulations associated with Davis-Bacon wages is a requirement that the individual decision by date be specified within the contract saying these are the rates that you will use. There are multiple schedules, multiple decisions, and those decisions come out periodically throughout the course of the year. Our documents did not include that decision and did not include the particular schedule that should be followed. So that's one thing that needs to be corrected. A second aspect of that particular one is also that there needs to be an update presented to the bidders or announced to the plan holders 10 days prior to the bid opening process. That was a step that was also not completed. So another thing that we need to resolve in the bidding of this particular project. The other area that we found that we were deficient in the process was that the disadvantaged business enterprise process requires that we work with the state agency that deals with the disadvantaged business enterprise program, the DBE program, so and notify them that we're putting a project out to bid so that they can then reach out to DBE firms within the region and say, here's a project you might want to consider. That was a step that was also not completed on our end. So because of that, or those items, and the fact that this is a project that partially or is funded through state revolving funds, which are federal dollars, means that we need to be very careful about being in compliance with all of those federal processes. And there are some obviously here that we have missed. Because of that, we then need to reject these bids as our recommendation from the staff and fix those items in our bid solicitation and put it back out on the street in a proper format for bidding again.
That was Moscow Public Works Director Les McDonald explaining to the City Council last night why staff is recommending the city rebid the job to drill City Well Number 10. The council vote to reject the two bids was 5-0. McDonald said the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality could approve the rebid this week, and the new bid advertisement could go out as early as Saturday. City engineer Kevin Lilly had estimated the job would cost $988,000 using 20-inch pipe, or $1.24 million using 24-inch pipe. Schneider Water Services of St. Paul, Oregon bid $1.28 million using 20-inch pipe and $1.44 million using 24-inch pipe. Holt Services of Edgewood, Washington bid $1.6 million using 20-inch pipe and $2.2 million using 24-inch pipe. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. A Moscow man pled guilty to sexual abuse of a child and video voyeurism yesterday in Second District Court in Moscow. Washington State Police initially contacted 36-year-old Joshua Daniels in June when they received a call from an employee of the Marriott Hotel on campus saying they had found videos of a juvenile girl undressing on one of the office computers. The videos also showed Daniels setting up the cameras. Daniels reportedly admitted during interviews with police he set up the cameras in the victim's bedroom and bathroom. According to an account in the Daily News, Daniels said in court yesterday he is pleading guilty, quote, because I realize I made a mistake and I would like to face it. Daniels pled guilty under a plea agreement with the state, which stipulates he must go through a psychosexual evaluation. After the evaluation, the prosecution will either recommend retained jurisdiction or prison. Sexual abuse of a child carries a maximum sentence of 25 years and a possible $5,000 fine. Video voyeurism carries a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison. Each offense has the potential for up to $50,000 in fines and restitution and requires the convicted person to register as a sex offender. Apartment mates found a 25-year-old man in his Grand Avenue apartment in Pullman Friday, unresponsive. Police, fire, and EMS crews responded to a call in the 1100 block of South Grand that morning when the roommates woke up and found the man unresponsive. An autopsy on the deceased is pending, but police say there seems to be no sign of suspicious or criminal activity in connection to the man's death. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. There is a chance of rain before 8 p.m., then showers likely, mainly between 8 p.m. and midnight. Cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy, low 35. Windy with west winds 30 to 35 miles an hour, decreasing to 20 to 25 miles an hour after midnight. Winds could gust as high as 50 miles an hour. 60% chance of precipitation. Tomorrow, increasing clouds, high 40, west winds 15, gusts to 20. Wednesday night, snow likely, possibly mixed with rain, mainly after 5 a.m., cloudy, low 33, 60% chance of precipitation, little or no snow accumulation expected. On Thursday, 70% chance of rain and snow, becoming all rain after midnight, cloudy, becoming all rain after noon, rather. Cloudy, high 39. Little or no snow accumulation expected. Thursday night, 20% chance of rain before midnight. Mostly cloudy, low 29. And partly sunny Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with highs around 37 Friday and Saturday, 40 on Sunday. Lows around 27 under mostly cloudy or partly cloudy skies Friday night and Saturday. Currently, light rain, 51 degrees at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport. There is a high wind warning in effect until midnight tonight. Widespread damaging winds expected, also blowing dust in the Columbia Basin. A strong Pacific storm system will produce an extreme wind pattern today. Downed trees and widespread power outages are expected. In addition, soil conditions across the Columbia Basin may be dry enough to allow winds to cause areas of blowing dust, reducing visibility. in the Interstate 90 corridor between George and Ritzville, and on U.S. Highway 395 between Ritzville and Connell. Numerous downed trees and power lines will result in power outages. Loose objects may become airborne. Driving will be difficult, especially for high-profile vehicles. In addition, dry soils may cause blowing gusts. The winds in the region expected to be southwest, 30 to 45 miles an hour, with gusts between 55 and 70 miles an hour. Strongest winds will be in exposed areas. A high wind warning means a hazardous high wind event is expected or occurring. Sustained winds of at least 40 miles an hour or gusts over 58 miles an hour can lead to property damage. Well, if you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. Remember, all editions of the KRFP Evening Report are archived on the KRFP website shortly after broadcast. I'm Lee Robartis. Scott Jackson assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP, Moscow Pullman, Community Radio for the Palouse, at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Have a good night.